You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 23 October. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb global headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. My last day before a week at a beach, Petri Riedenhuis will be standing in for me next week. On the show today, Wayne McCurry, those clicks results, they are always top quality. The Kumba update, Keith McLachlan on his preferred infrastructure stock and not what most of us think it would be. And then runway sale and sustainability of value fashion versus secondhand fashion. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb: clicks and incurred $44 million in COVID-19 related costs. And from CNBC, Goldman Sachs agrees to pay more than $2.9 billion to resolve probes into its 1MDB scandal. Morning markets, US was green overnight, S&P up 0.5%, the Nasdaq up 0.2%. Asia's mixed, Sydney down a little bit, almost 0.1%, and Tokyo up 0.4%. Commodities green, gold $1,908 an ounce, Rand 16.22. Top 40 opening call looking for a green open about 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Wayne McCurry. He's a senior portfolio manager, F&B Wealth and Investments. Wayne, clicks results yesterday. This has to be, you know, perhaps the top management team on our JSE. Every year, every 6 months, they just come out with, you know, revenue up, HEPS doing better, dividend doing better still. It is the slickest operation on our market. Is that a fair shout?
I think it probably is, y'all. It's certainly the slickest retail operation and maybe the slickest South African-orientated company on our market. So the results were very, very good out yesterday. I mean, earnings were up, all those things you said.
And the one thing with it, the one criticism of clicks is that it is expensive. But yes. I mean, as long as I've been watching clicks, it's never been cheap. You know, for that level of quality and organizational skill, you need to pay up for that. I mean, you're not going to get this on a 10 times PE.
Yeah, you're not, but you must remember, it is a 30 times PE.
Yes. Yeah,
and I mean, that's not shy. You know, earnings are up what, 10, 12, 14%, somewhere around there. 30 PE is very expensive, even for that type of earnings performance. But I suppose, you know, maybe you've just got to stomach the high PE, because clearly the company, I mean, in the last 5 years, it's doubled. I don't know any other South African-orientated share of that size that's done that. Certainly no retailer, no other retailer.
Yeah, actually, I mean, looking at that chart, I mean, it's almost tripled in the last 5 years.
Yes.
To a time when our market has absolutely gone sideways. And
yes,
probably at every point in those 5 years, it has been an expensive stock. It certainly kept me away. And of course, I'm poorer for it, because that valuation has always stressed me. And I should actually maybe just, well, if I had a time machine.
Market.
or try go back 5 years. Kumba came out with a trading update yesterday. We saw, I mean, production a little bit down. That was expected. What they're really benefiting from is an iron ore price, which just remains, I mean, for the period, $117 a ton. The year average is $103. Iron ore above $100 still sort of boggles me. But, I mean, Kumba is making hay while they can.
Yes, they are. Look, I mean, over time, the iron ore price has got to go back between 60 and 80. I mean, that is the natural price range for iron ore. You must remember, not that long ago, 2015, that I think the iron ore price got down to, was it $30
a
ton? Or somewhere around there. So, I mean, it is just, quite frankly, too high. And, of course, there's no per se natural shortage of iron ore. You know, there's plenty of supply around. You know, it's not like platinum and palladium, where there is clearly a restricted supply. So over time, that price must come down. But it was a good trading update in respect of the actual production and the sales dynamics, because with the Kumba, their sales were actually good, and they specifically mentioned there that Transnet had sorted out its logistics. So even though production was down, sales were actually up a little bit, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And that's because, I mean, most of their mining is happening in Sishen, which is literally the middle of the country. And Transnet's got to get that across to Saldanha to get it to the markets.
Yeah, and they've had many problems over the years, collapsing bridges and derailments, and they've had many, many problems over the years. So it was really nice to see that Transnet actually delivered on their promises during this time period.
I must say, looking at this five-year chart, this was a 40 Rand stock 5 years ago. And I remember chatting with you at the time. I mean, they got down to, I think, sub 30, and then suddenly they were producing...
They went to 25.
25, and then they came out with HEPS of 25 Rand, and it basically paid for itself. The driver in the iron ore price, I'm imagining that really is, it's the sense around infrastructure spend, as a response to the global pandemic, certainly out of China, and in time, perhaps potentially other markets as well.
Yeah, I think so. But you must remember that even given all of those factors, the iron ore price is unsustainably high where it is now.
Yeah, so you're buying it at sort of rarefied levels, and sort of.
You think so, but I mean, the share itself, obviously, when you look at current share price dynamics, I mean, it looks incredibly cheap if you evaluate it on a price earnings ratio of about 10, and you're getting about a 7% dividend yield.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that looks incredibly cheap, but of course, the earnings won't be sustainable at this level. So you know, I would think that in 2-3 years' time, earnings will come down to 40 Rand a share.
Yeah, yeah, and that's it. And it's the nature of cyclical stocks. Excuse me. Altron results out, what really strikes me with that, they're going to be listing their Bytes UK. They're listed London primarily, South Africa and inward listed onto the JSE. They're going to be a nice little addition to our market. I mean, we just need more listings on the JSE, and we'll take anything. But, you know, Bytes UK, a solid ICT out of the UK. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, look, I mean, it was actually a very good set of results, and I think you saw it in there. In the share price, and any new listing is welcome. But you must remember, over time, the JSE will probably suffer from more delistings than new listings, because that's just the nature of a global financial market.
Yeah.
There is just more capital overseas. And as the companies get bigger and expand, essentially the JSE will be a South African-orientated listing vehicle. Because the only reason why we get all these major big listings is actually exchange control, because you have to maintain a South African share register. In other words, you can't buy shares in the JSE and go sell them in the UK and keep the pounds there. That money's got to come back, and the only way it comes back is if you keep a separate register for SA residents. So, you know, I would think, I don't know, 50, 60, 70% of the JSE's listings are there because of exchange control.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for that, our small market would be absolutely tiny. Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, FNB Wealth and Investment. Appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan. You find him at Alpha Wealth Asset Management. Just talking there with Wayne McCurry around infrastructure. And a lot of talk around infrastructure. We had our president speak last week. Next week, Finance Minister Mboweni will tell us where the money is coming from. And when we think infrastructure, we think, you know, PPC Robex, Afrimat, Wilson Bailey, Marion Roberts, although they're no longer in construction. But those are the stocks that come to mind. Keith has a different stock entirely. Keith, morning. Appreciate your time. So you're going off in a totally different direction for an infrastructure play in our South African market.
Morning, Simon. Absolutely. So at the heart of the infrastructure spend in South Africa has to be Eskom. That's the bottleneck in the economy. You've got to de-bottleneck it to allow kind of runway to grow. Now, when I talk about Eskom infrastructure spend, typically people think of, you know, the Dupia Kusile, big power plants, you know, makes my skin crawl, but nuclear and potentially renewables, which is actually a very large part of that. And typically the companies benefiting from that first demand is, and you listed a whole range of them, the heavy construction guys. But consider for a moment, first of all, that it's not just the big construction that's important. It's in fact the distribution, not just generation, but distribution of that power. And then second of all, the fact that the heavy construction guys have contract and execution risk. Mm-hmm. On those major contracts, and in fact, they only earn on average about a 2% operating margin, which is shockingly small. flip that round and consider for a moment the cabling guys. The cabling guys are absolutely key in terms of distribution. A power plant that is not connected to a grid and a grid that is not sufficiently spread and maintained is just pointless. So the cabling guys are quite important. And of the cabling guys, you just chatting to Wayne, you touched on Ultron. They used to own a cabling business, which they obviously sold. The only list of cabling business at this point is within Roynet. So I think Roynet is a very attractive play, particularly given how it's being priced. So if I have a look, and by the way, it's cabling side, that segment runs on average operating profits of margins of about 10 to 15%. So multiples of the heavy construction guys without the execution and contract risk. And then consider for a moment how it's priced. And this is really the asymmetrical nature of the market where you can find these things. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. So if I'm buying, for example, WBHO, I'm getting a blue chip heavy construction, but I'm paying 100 Rand a share for that, not getting anything else. And that runs with execution contract risk and the like, and only at about a 2.5% operating profit margin. If I buy Roynet, what I'm actually paying for is I'm paying for an RCT, let's call it the telcos and tech division, a RP-rich, export-strong defense division. Those two things on a times multiple with an ungeared balance sheet, and I'm getting the cabling side free. So I get better margins, I get better upside, and I'm not even paying for it.
And I like your point around the execution risk, because and what you're meaning, if I'm understanding correctly, is Roynet just basically gets an order and they say, you know, you want X, I don't know, miles of cable, however it's sold, kilograms or whatever, and they deliver. There's no risk for them. I mean, they're going to get paid, they're going to make their margin. They don't have any of those other complexities of heavy construction.
Well, flip that around and have a look at the heavy construction, and this is what execution risk is. Running at a 2% operating margin, that means that if 1 in 50 contracts you cannot execute profitably on, you're potentially wiping out the other 49 contracts worth of profits. Yeah. So you're working for free. And so don't forget, when you sign a massive and complex construction contract, it's either an asset, so you're going to make profit out of it, or it's a liability. Because anyway, even if it's running at a loss, you've got to execute on it.
Yeah.
Cabling and the materials guys don't have that risk. They just get to supply into these things.
Yeah, I remember post-World Cup, all those contracts. Every time a construction company had results, they'd be like, we've got loss-making contracts, but hopefully they'll be gone soon. Quickly, before I let you go, a Distill update, earlier in the week, I think just after the close on Wednesday, and the market loved it. Lots around it. The key number, which you alerted me to, is they cut their net debt by almost 2 billion Rand in one quarter.
So the only way, and that was the only actual number, there's a lot of narrative and the volumes are better than expected and it's growing nicely in Africa. So like the narrative was stronger and more positive than I expected, which is brilliant. But the only number actually quoted in that update was the net debt. Now it dropped, net debt drops by about 1.7 billion. The only way you drop net debt is by generating free cash flow. And that's after CapEx and everything. So if you take that number of free cash flow and you annualize it, Distell is trading at about a 40% free cash flow yield. There's absolutely a reason the market loves that.
Yeah, and sent it up, I think, trading up. I mean, it's one of those stocks that obviously really had a tough time in the lockdown, but it has really come back. Still well off where it started the year, but it had an excellent 2 days. Keith McLachlan, really appreciate your time. You find him, Alpha Wealth Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Rob Noble. He is COO of Runway Sale. Rob, morning. Appreciate your time. A note that was sent out by you guys earlier in the week really got me scratching my head. And truthfully, learning all sorts of stuff, going down rabbit holes. Next, start with value fashion. To me, value fashion was going to be, well, that's the sort of cheap and nasty. It's not the cheap and nasty. Value fashion is the concept of sort of end of line, which retailers are marking down, and they're marking it down sometimes very aggressively, not because it's inferior, but because they want to get rid of it to avoid, in essence, having to send it off into dumps and landfills.
Good morning, Simon. Exactly that. You know, value fashion is about giving brands a responsible channel to get rid of their excess stock. I think with consumers becoming more aware of sustainability, you know, these stories of high-end fashion brands burning stock or sending it to landfills, you know, that's not acceptable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we give these brands an opportunity to sell these products to customers that probably wouldn't normally reach, because we've got a much broader sort of customer base with them, being an online retailer as well. And, you know, they don't cannibalize it into their full price stock, and they protect their brand at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, this is not about me going into, I was going to say, Edmore. Edgar's is still around, and seeing sort of the markdown racks. I mean, the value category is a category of its own. Retailers such as yourself, Runway Sale, and is actually a surprisingly significant category in the fashion space.
Exactly. I mean, value fashion is holding about 14% of the market and growing steadily, you know, so it is sizable. And, you know, we've got the benefit of being online and in that segment. And COVID has just accelerated this push into online.
I'm one of those people who, for the first time in my life, have actually bought clothes online. In my case, it was shoes, but I would never have done that pre-COVID, but I needed shoes and it was just made sense. Well, what we're now seeing, and this was even in a weirder until I dug into it, Levi's now got a platform whereby people drop off old clothes for vouchers. And what we're seeing, the value fashion, the more I dug into it, the more I started to understand that this is actually about conscious consumers. This is, you know, yes, we're saving money, but actually we are doing good at the same time. And Levi's sort of coming into that from a different perspective, saying, you know, don't throw those clothes away. We can actually recycle, repurpose, and build this concept of a more conscious consumer.
Exactly. I mean, it's a great initiative by Levi's. I mean, they're building loyalty in a slightly different way and you know, tying people to their brand. And I think we're going to see more brands sort of going that direction and being creative in terms of their sustainability. I mean, already consumers are challenging brands on their sustainability and asking a lot more questions than what they were previously, you know, in terms of where the products come from, what are they made of. There's going to be a move away from this disposable fashion as people want clothes that last.
Yeah, and it's not as, you know, this is not, I mean, so Levi, I mean, to a degree, because of course they're giving you a voucher back, so to some degree it competes against the value fashion, but they in a bigger picture, it's actually value fashion, the vouchers from Levi is competing against the old school of fashion and again driving that process of being conscious consumers, being aware of our sort of environmental footprint.
Exactly. And brands are just going to, and manufacturers are going to have to just get smarter in how they do this in many ways. And the sort of that second-hand fashion sort of upcycling thing is going to be more of a trend. And it's not as big in South Africa yet as it is overseas, but I only see it gaining traction here.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I mean, is it? I mean, and it used to be. You know, in my youth, it was. You know, there was a shop in Durban which I used to be able to go to when I visited London. There were the thrift shops, a lot of secondhand clothing stores. Is this something? I imagine it's also it's something that can operate in an online environment, much as yourselves operate in the value fashion and online.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a big trader in the US called The Real Real, and they operate, you know, if you look at their landing page and their website, it's, mm-hmm. you know, very similar to any online fashion retailer, except it's, you know, it's all secondhand fashion.
Yeah, it, as I said, I went down this rabbit hole and it absolutely fascinated me. That is Rob Noble. He's COO of Runway Sale. In sense, they are our value fashion in South Africa and they're online. We'll leave that there. Rob, really appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. wherever you get good podcasts. Chat to us on the social media, hashtag MoneyWebNow. A huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Kodora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWebNow. I am on leave next week. Petri Raden-Hayes will be standing in for me. I will see you at the other side of the next week.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the Money.